If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Thank you for listening today. I'm Joe Galuski. Dr. Mike Royson is here. What does a yearbook photo have to do with future marital success, or for that matter, divorce? Can a CEO's appearance tell you anything about a company's quarterly earnings? And how to get along in life by just making the right decisions? Matthew Hertenstein is an associate professor of psychology at DePauw University, and his book is called The Tell, The Little Clues That Reveal Big Truths About Who We Are, and it's published by Basic Books. Hey, Professor, thanks for coming on. Dr. Mike is here, too. Let me ask you, the book, how is, in general terms, how is the information in this book applicable to our lives we live every day?
Yeah, great question. Well, you know, essentially, a lot of books lately have kind of told us where we go wrong, how our minds are biased and whatnot. And that's true in many cases. But with this book, I kind of wanted to show people where we actually go right, at least oftentimes, and how we, you know, we're told not to judge a book by its cover, so to speak. We're not told not to judge people by, you know, looking at them. But it turns out that scientists are doing studies over the last 10, 20 years showing us that we're pretty accurate in a lot of cases, and we should give ourselves a little bit more credit.
Now, the book briefly is called The Tell. What's that mean, The Tell?
Well, I take the title off of the idea of a poker tell, you know, the nonverbal behaviors or how people hold their cards in poker, and that it gives away something about their card, something about their hand. And in the same way, all of us give away signals to other people, and we can pick up on those signals as well from others, and that reveals something about who they are, be it their personality or what they'll be like in the future or something about their relationships or whatnot.
That's pretty cool. Here's Dr. Mike Royson. Dr. Mike.
Matthew, thanks for coming on. I found this fascinating, and a number of the reasons that I found it fascinating relate to our current technology. And more we're trying to do meetings via, if you will, internet capability. We're showing internet screens to others and talking on the phone. And it seems to me this gives away or does not take advantage of a lot of verbal cues. What do you think about that? And should we be doing all of our meetings in person?
You know, that's something I speculate about in the book a little bit at the end, actually, is the role that technology will play. And I think about it in a couple of ways. Number one, I mean, you think about children being raised today and how their lives and their communication with their friends and family members is vastly different than what it was for me when I was growing up. So I wonder, you know, what is the impact of that on their ability to read other people's cues and be able to perceive that? And you know, scientists, we don't have an answer to that, but I suspect that it's going to play a role. And then, you know, even for adults who have kind of come into the electronic age, digital natives or digital immigrants, I should say, so to speak, like myself, you know, I think it probably does have an impact. It probably, you know, dulls our ability to perceive others' cues and whatnot and make predictions. But at the same time, I still think we're pretty darn good at it.
Well, you know, the thing that I have seen is I feel I get a lot better responses and a lot better, patient following of the plans we agree on when I'm looking directly at the patient rather than I'm looking at the electronic medical record and trying to type. And one of the things we're doing in medicine relating to that is we're using scribes. So the scribe takes notes while I'm talking to the patient and the patient's talking to me. But I can be focusing on the patient and read their body language and a lot of their verbal cues of whether they, when they agree to something, whether they're really agreeing to it, or when they suggest something, whether they're just suggesting it because they think it's socially acceptable and I'll enjoy it, or I'll accept it, versus they'll really do it. And so I think it's actually very pertinent for that, as well as a lot of the examples you give. we should cite some of the examples, because this is really a wonderful book. And just for people, it's called The Tell, and it's by Matthew, is it Hertenstein, H-E-R-T-E-N-S-T-E-I-N? How do you pronounce that?
Right, it's Hertenstein, actually. Hertenstein.
Hertenstein, and it's published by Basic Books. It's available at Amazon.com. So one of the things you talk about is how men and women pick mates. Do you want to expand on that rather than my asking questions about what you wrote?
Sure. And just to back up for just a minute, if you don't mind, one of the things I do talk about in the book a little bit is that patient-physician relationship a little bit. And there's actually evidence that patients will sort of be more likely to comply with doctors' treatment plans, you know, take the medicine or whatnot, if the physician is sort of enthusiastic and empathic to that person. And, of course, that emotional communication is central to that of what you were talking about. So I just wanted to map onto a little bit about what you said. In terms of mating, so evolutionary psychologists have been really interested in, you know, men and women and why we choose each other and who we choose and whatnot, and as well as relationships and marriage. And so, you know, I talk a lot about relationships in my book, The Tell. And one of the interesting things that's come out of this is that we can predict the success of relationships or lack thereof, and in some ways. So, for example, there's one researcher at the University of Washington named John Gottman, who can observe engaged couples talking about something that's, you know, a difficult issue in their relationship, be it sex or money or future in-laws or whatnot. And within about observing them for about 3 minutes, he and his team can predict with about 92% accuracy who's going to get divorced or who's going to stay married before they even get married. So it's pretty amazing that we can pick up on these nonverbal cues. And I did some studies, too, looking at yearbook photos, and that actually predicts divorce as well.
Other than just telling us that, give us I can ask you questions, but one of the things you talk about is symmetry and smiling. Go and expand on the smiling in the yearbook photos, would you?
Yeah, sure. So we did this really interesting study where we looked at college yearbook photos and we coded the degree to which people smiled in their photos. And specifically, we looked at two muscles, one that pulls up the lip corners of your mouth, of course, to make you smile. But then there's the other muscle that surrounds your eye. And this muscle is called the orbicularis oculi, if you're interested. And this muscle is very difficult to contract voluntarily. Only about 10% of people can do it.
We call it the corner of the eye muscle.
Yeah, corner of the eye muscle. I like that. that gives you those crow's feet, you know, when you smile, and it gives you those little lines on the side of your eyes. And so we coded those two muscles and looked to see how intensely they were contracted, and we found that the people who smiled least in their college yearbook photos were actually about 5 times more likely to get a divorce at some point in their life compared to those who smiled the most. And we followed up this study with another one where we looked at childhood photos, taking all kinds of different photos, you know, be it, you know, blowing out candles at the birthday cake, opening up a present during the holidays or whatnot. And the average age at which these photos was taken was about 10 years old. And we found the same exact trend. Those people who smiled least were more likely to get divorced compared to those who smiled most in that study. So a pretty interesting study.
We'll pick up on
when
that. Okay, Mike, you want to do it? I'll do it. You do it?
No, you do it.
Okay, Matthew Hertenstein. His book is called The Tell, The Little Cues That Reveal Big Truths About Who We Are. More with our guest after the break on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Royce and on Radio MD. Stay well.
Is your skin aging before your eyes? There is something you can do to reverse those signs of aging. I'm plastic surgeon Dr. Arthur Perry, and my solution doesn't involve a knife or a needle. It's a serum I created called Nighttime. Nighttime makes your skin smoother, brighter, and thicker with just one step each day. I've packed Nighttime with vitamin C and A, moisturizers, fruit acids, skin brighteners, and antioxidants. That's a lot of science in one bottle. But that's what it takes to make your skin look younger and more attractive. Until Labor Day, when you purchase two bottles of Nighttime, you'll get a third bottle free with free shipping. Call 855-940-1800. That's 855-940-1800. Or on the web, it's drperrys.com. That's drperrys.com. Put the word Radio MD in the discount box to receive three bottles of Nighttime for the price of two.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission: to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Matthew Hertenstein, his book is called The Tell, The Little Clues That Reveal the Big Truths About Who We Are. It's published by Basic Books. You should read it. And here again is Dr. Mike Roizen. Dr. Mike.
Now, Matthew, in The Tell, you tell about the corners of the eyes on those yearbook photos, in addition to just the smile. So it's a real smile versus a put-on smile. Go and expand on that a little bit, would you?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of research has shown over the last couple of decades that when people will smile with that muscle around their eyes, in addition to the one that pulls up their lip corners, it's more of a genuine smile, and we see differences in how the brain lights up in terms of showing more genuine smiling. People report feeling more genuine joy when that eye muscle contracts. And like I said, people can't do it voluntarily for the most part. Only about 10% of people can. So, you know, if you tell a joke, for example, and you see somebody smile at you and they don't contract that muscle around their eyes, but they do smile nonetheless, that probably means they don't really find your joke all that funny, honestly, because it's not a genuine smile. They're just, you know, being polite to you to show you that smile, so to speak. So that muscle around the eyes really makes a difference in terms of how people feel and experience it, even physiologically in the brain.
So when you look at it on your yearbook, and we're going to ask about Facebook as well, but when you look at it on the yearbook, what you really want to do is see that the corner of the eye smile, and that's who you want to, if you're looking for a mate, you want to look at that yearbook photo to see whether it's likely you're going to stay married. Is that because it reveals that they have a sense of humor and it's necessary to have a sense of humor in any compromising, long-term compromising, meaning a relationship where you've got to compromise a lot, which is what you have to do with marriage, or is there some other reason?
Yeah, well, our study definitely shows that you can predict marital stability from the smile, but it doesn't answer the question of why. I do have some speculations, but before I give them, I just want to say, too, this is, I think, important for listeners to know, is that I would be hesitant to, you know, on a case-by-case basis to look at people's yearbook photos, because you never know. Somebody could be having a bad day when they go ahead and have their picture taken. a specific person could, or maybe they don't feel confident about their teeth for some reason, so they don't want to smile,
well,
or
but you,
whatever it might
but you,
be.
You did say it had a 92% prediction rate, though.
Well, for that was for the when you're observing couples interact with each other for about three or four minutes. But for the yearbook photo study, you're right, in the sense that, you know, the lowest, or the smile, the people that smiled least were five times more likely. So there's definitely a relationship, but I just want to make sure that we're careful to know that these are averages looking at a lot of people. Because again, you know, I wouldn't want anybody to like not marry somebody because they weren't smiling in their yearbook photo. But to answer your question, there's a couple of candidate explanations, I think. Number one, I think people in general who smile in their photos and contract that orbicular oculi muscle around the eye, those people, evidence shows, tend to be be happier in life. There's other studies that show that. They report higher levels of well-being and whatnot. They also probably attract other happier people, right? Smiles are very powerful things in our lives, and it's not. A smile is not only a reflection of an internal state of how we feel, but they're powerful signals that affect other people. And it really, really affects their relationships. There's another study that actually you mentioned Facebook, where they researchers coded smiling in Facebook photos, and they found that people who did smile in their Facebook photos had a significantly greater social network, had more friends, they had more support. And so there's something about smiling in those photos that reveal that sort of thing. But, smiling is probably, you know, more on people's faces that are more optimistic and just generally happier. And that, you know, like I said, they attract other like people. But there's, you know, there's other explanations. For example, one of my favorites is maybe people who smile in response to the photographer asking them to smile are more obedient, and perhaps obedience helps nurture the stability of a relationship. Who knows?
Oh, please.
I know.
Now, I should ask you, are you married?
I am married, in fact, yes.
And did you look at your wife's yearbook picture before you got married?
Well, when I married her, I hadn't done the study, so I didn't know to look at her photo. But since then, I have, and I'm happy to say that she had a huge smile on her face, thankfully. And I looked at my yearbook photos, and I smiled, but not. I wouldn't say it was a huge smile, very intense smile. So I'm glad that I married somebody that did.
Now the. So she's obviously helping you along. Now, you also go into spotting autism early. I should tell you, my wife is a developmental pediatrician, and like what you said, believes that that obviously early intervention makes a difference, and that observing the child early on is very important. But tell us about what you found in the research about observation and early childhood observation and autism.
Yeah, in the last 5 to 10 years, there's been some more and more research piling up showing that, number one, the earlier you intervene in trying to treat autism, the younger a child is, the more likely that a person will have success in that treatment because the brain is so plastic early on, and so it can be molded by experience. So the trick, of course, and the goal is to try to identify autism as early as possible. And they are learning that we can do this earlier and earlier. And in the book I talk about, in fact, what really got me interested in this is my own son, Isaac, had some red flags for autism very early in his life. And these red flags alerted me, and as a developmental psychologist, I was kind of tuned into these. And he was showing things like, you know, not looking into our eyes. You know, he wasn't gazing into our eyes when we would look into his, which was kind of a red flag. He wouldn't babble like a lot of babies would at a certain age. He was kind of, it looked like he was in his own world a bit, you know, and he was rocking back and forth sometimes and whatnot. So he had a lot of these red flags, and it turns out that these red flags, even as young as 2 months old, one study showed recently, it was a study published last month in Nature, where they researchers found that babies who would or children who would eventually develop autism don't look into the eyes of adults nearly as often as typically developing infants, starting as young as, like I said, 2 months old. So these are really important red flags to look at.
But I do want to tell people how good the book The Tell is, the little clues that reveal big truths about who we are. The Tell, T-E-L-L, Matthew Hertenstein, H-E-R-T-E-N-S-T-A-E-I-N, has been on with us. Sensational book, wonderful book. Thank you very much.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike on Radio MD. Stay well.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to GreatStartGTL.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
You may already take omega-3s for heart and brain health, but what most people don't realize is that DHA is really the preferred form. Did you know if you take omega-3s but your body cannot convert them into the preferred DHA form, you won't get much benefit? The ultimate DHA omega-3 would be water-soluble, so it's already in the right form for digestion. That's a game-changer. It would eliminate the fish burps, be good-tasting and all-natural. It would be environmentally sustainable from algae oil, plus non-GMO and allergen-free. Well, I have some good news for you. Empirical Labs already invented this. And better yet, you can get a bottle right now for 50% off with a special offer at TakeOmega.com. This is the only water-soluble DHA supplement, plus it's vegan. So go to TakeOmega.com right now for a limited time savings, 50% off at TakeOmega.com. That's O-M-E-G-A, TakeOmega.com.